Hey y'all, it is Tom here. Just wanted to give you a quick warning that this episode was recorded many moons ago in a land that we knew as 2020 with our friend Jared Thompson from the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. And even though it was only a couple months ago, I just wasn't sure if we said anything that seemed dated and not of this modern 2021 world that we're now accustomed to. And I don't think we did, but didn't want you to be jarred, you know. Also, get on the Patreon. It's only $3 a friggin' month, 10% off if you do the whole year, and you get bonus episodes every week. This week's episode, Tommy and I are going to talk about our favorite 90s songs, so it is a nice little follow-up to this episode. So get on there, and without further ado, here is the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Tekar, the birthday boy himself, the Wolf of Dog Street, and I'm joined, as always, by Tommy McNamara, the Prince of Snarkness. How are you? How are you, Tommy?
Well, it's my favorite holiday, so I'm very Tom's birthday every year. I go out to the apartment and I say, "What day is it?" Some kid says, "It's Tom Tekar's birthday."
It's not too late. So we are recording this. You guys will figure out on my birthday, which will have been 3 years from when this airs. But
how old are you, Tom?
I'm 33.
So I've known you since you were 21, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
That is crazy, man. I gotta look back on some things. I have to reflect. We have you heard him already. That's right. Not only did they go to Jared for a segment, they went to Jared for another episode. The well that never runs dry. Jared Thompson is our guest.
It is the most requested thing that I do my my decades list. I know you guys are just inundated with emails about it. When are we going to do the 90s? When are we going to do the 2000s?
Well, please. Well,
people have been asking us. They want you to start in the 30s so we can get more episodes. So if we start back there, yeah.
Just Django Reinhardt. Six songs by Django Reinhardt. That's like the only person I know that was making music. Robert Johnson. One song by Robert Johnson.
Yeah. That's derivative of beep-a-doo-doo.
I might be able to do a 50s list, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I bet you could do a 50s list.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like Buddy Holly, Elvis. Sure. Like, what else is that, you know?
Sure.
It's like, yeah.
Well, Elvis is actually, he stole all of his music, so should probably go back and find the R&B singers of the day who he ripped everything off from.
For sure, like Chuck Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Buck
Cherry. Jared.
Buck.
You said
that, wait, is that what the name was?
Is Buck Cherry? Is that "Come My Lady"? Come, come. Is that them?
That's crazy town.
Yeah, you're crazy bitch. But you fuck so good that I'm on top of it.
Mm-hmm. When I dream,
I know that one. Seeing you all night. some so good. You get me right on.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do a bit. So. All right. So seriously, this just happened. When Tommy texted and pushed back, I was like, "Hey, I've got time to go to." I had done a drive up order at Target, so I left and went to Target. And what's really crazy is I was driving there, and "Killing Me Softly" by Roberta Flack came on 70s on 7. So I drive up to Target. I can't figure out how to pop my trunk without actually popping it myself. Like I was hitting the thing and it wouldn't work. So I get out of the car and pop my trunk, and the guy is coming towards me and walks up to the car at the same time, and Margaritaville starts. So I just go, "No, no," and that's it. It's like legitimately.
That is like that is the worst thing that could happen to Jared. That's the equivalent to the Jeffrey Toobin thing happening to Jared.
Yeah, I would rather be caught jacking off on a Zoom call with all my colleagues.
Hey, you're getting dangerously close to it. Where's the rest of that arm?
And it sucks because you had ordered one shaker of salt, which made it seem like you planned it.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. What's weird is that Target is right next to where Cheeseburger in Paradise was, too.
That's right. That's right.
It's all starting to add up.
Dana Thompson had mold on her burger at that place.
Ugh. Oh, she got blue cheese? Why did we go there?
I don't know, but we did. It's disgusting. But
when that place opened, I think I was in high school, and I was like, finally, this town's getting somewhere.
Right, right, right.
Finally, we got something good.
Yeah. Well, I don't even, I mean, they just had like burgers. I don't even like remember really what it was like.
Yeah, I think it was just cheeseburgers. And they had live music too. That was often very bad, but I remember being like, we were like hyped that there was live music, and my friends like wanted to bang the like acoustic cover band or whatever.
You think Buck Cherry ever played at that Margaritaville over here on the east side of Bloomington?
I mean, if it's any place worth its margarita salt, then
they are the type of band that would get discovered at a Margaritaville.
Yeah, for sure.
Just some drunk like millionaire who doesn't know where to go. Yeah. Like, who is it? I've told this story recently on the show, but I don't think I told you it, that I was at a Nashville airport and a guy was doing a cover of Imagine Dragons, and the crowd was going insane. It was like 2 p.m. at a Nashville airport, and there was a guy singing Radioactive, and like three people went up to the guy after he finished playing, and they were like, what was that song?
They were like Jared Logan, like they didn't know that they could listen to music until they were 35 or whatever.
That was the first time any of them had heard music. They were from the music version of that Footloose town, and yeah, I think we might have said all of this on the Jared Logan episode, so that's what we're gonna do from now on.
Footloose by Kenny Loggins is what I flipped it to get it off of Jimmy Buffett.
Wow. See, this is, it's all too connected. Absolutely. See, this is when people want to say there isn't a God. I go, what about all that?
What about
how is all these things that connect together? You think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. You think life could write a script like that? No, that's God. And he has the best team of writers of all time. The angels. That's pretty kooky. That is the worst thing that could ever happen to Jared, which is very funny. Yeah. My cat is losing its mind. Chill out, bud. You're cool. You're good, my man. I know. It's crazy that happened to Jared and that he made that story up for the podcast. My cat accused you of making up a bit.
The first bit I've ever written, and I got accused of stealing it immediately.
It really upsets my cat when he hears false premises.
Kidding. Oh my god.
Anyway, Jared, you are here to talk about a decade that we millennials refer to as the 90s, and this episode I think we should call it six songs that only 90s kids will know. I think that
a mental floss quiz.
That's right. I think that this is in fact a test. And hey, want to feel old? These songs all came out in the 90s. And no, the 90s was not 10 years ago, like many of you seem to think.
Right. That's so true. It really is weird. Maybe the weirdest thing about this, about thinking about the 90s for me, is that it seems like I would have been older at the beginning of the 90s. I was 13 at the beginning of the 90s, which is still too young to really understand what's going on in music.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, like, I already kind of, you know, I started listening to punk rock about a year later. So most music that was released in the 90s that would ever be considered popular in any way, I would have hated at the time that it was released, just because when you get into punk rock, you're like you are obligated to hate anything popular. Like,
sure.
And I mean, especially then, like, it was like, you had to be as counterculture as you possibly could find a way to do it. But maybe the most interesting thing about the 90s from a music standpoint, in my opinion, is that it's really the first decade where popular music and what is like sort of established as the best music of the decade are two completely, I don't want to say completely, but two pretty different lists. Whereas if you go every other decade starting in, you know, the 50s, those two lists were almost the same, where what was on the charts and what was selling was also what we remember as the best music of that time frame, with, you know, some minor, you know, blips on the radar. But the Rolling Stones, you know, the Beatles, Zeppelin, they sold a lot of records, their songs were popular, and they also were what we remember from that era. Starting in the 90s, and in fact, in preparation for this, I made two different lists for the club, like basically regular music of the 90s and then what I believe are the best songs of the 90s. And there is some overlap, of course, but it is really the first time that I made a decade playlist where the music that I like is probably a little bit more obscure than what we remember historically from it. And it'll also be interesting to see as time goes on, will someone like Elliott Smith, for instance, get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Like, will he ever get famous enough after he's been dead for this long to ever actually get the sort of notoriety that he probably should have had when he was alive, but just didn't, if that makes sense.
Certainly. Yeah. I think that those are all interesting and good points. I was also just I've been trying to think of 90s music that I like. I think what we should do, though, is right off the bat, I think we should play one of the songs from this list to get us into it, to get us into the mood for what we're doing here. And you did send me you sent two different lists because you left one off of the first one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first song you gave me here, in reverse order, we'll go 6-1. And we will not be going 10-1 the way a friend of the show, Brian McKnight, would like us to go.
great song. 90s R&B star Brian McKnight?
Hey, I don't want to give anything away for the rest of this list, so he might be on there.
Well,
Back to One, of course, which was both an R&B hit and a country hit, because God forbid the country people hear the Brian McKnight version and enjoy that. They had to have a white guy also sing it. Although maybe that went in reverse order. I don't know who had the song first, now that I say that. Do you want to hear the honorable mentions first? Because gave me two honorable mentions.
There's nine songs then. Yeah, I think we're good with just
You're
six.
Right. You're right. All right. So let's hear the first song on this list, which is Elliott Smith, you went with, and it's Waltz Too. It is my birthday, and it's been a very busy day, not big day. But I have to find this song real fast here. I got it right here. Okay. So this is Waltz number 2 in parentheses XO. I don't want to leave that out. Here is the song.
She
So an interesting story about that song. I saw Elliott Smith probably, I mean, it could have been 10 times. Certainly it was at least 7 or 8 times. And I would go, he'd go back and forth touring with a band and by himself. And when that, I think he said on stage that he had written that song like that week or, you know, that month or whatever. And the version that he played that first time that I saw him play it live was just him, and it was one of the most like haunting, because he slowed it down like really, really slow, and it was it just chills. Of course that was there's probably only like 80 people at the show, which is just a crazy thing to think about. You know, they've released like 5 albums of his after he's died. So like, I'm assuming that if he wouldn't have died, his shows now would have like 1,000 people or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, that song is, to me, that's the best thing he ever did. That's the best song that he ever wrote. And that version of that song is, even though the version I saw first was great and haunting, that version with a full band is really great.
I liked that a lot. Yeah, I'd never heard that song before. I enjoyed it. Wow. I never got into Elliott Smith. But it's not by like, oh, I heard some and just didn't enjoy it. It's just I just never sought it out. I will say, you were saying that concert experience of him being like, oh, I just wrote it this week. You never see, you know how sometimes a comedian will do a thing where they're like, that's not even a joke. That just happened. You never hear that in music where somebody just goes, that wasn't even a song. That just happened. Maybe that's what guitar riffing is.
Were you in Bloomington, Tom, when John Mulaney came to the club last time? I know you weren't living there.
Not last time, no. I was, so, no, the only, both times that, no, I was only there once when he was there, and it was the maybe the best. It was when he was just doing the album that would be new in town. Plus, yes, he was doing some tracks from Top Part, and it was like the best show I'd ever seen.
Well, it's crazy. The reason I ask is because I thought you were going to say that comics never say, I just wrote that. But so no shit. This is sincerely what happened. He was there on like a Thursday, his first show of the weekend. And he did, as I'm sure you guys have watched the new special, he did the Trump horse loose in a hospital joke. Mm-hmm. And he closed on it. And he got off stage. I mean, people fell down. during that joke.
Like, was that during the gas leak era of the Comedy Attic?
Yeah, right. So he gets off stage and I was like, dude, what the hell? Like, that's one of the best jokes I've ever seen. He said, thanks, man. I wrote that on Tuesday.
Man, that's crazy.
It was Thursday. I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's crazy. And he was lying. I know that he wrote that before because he did it on Conan O'Brien, actually. It'd be funny if you just bust him. You're like, dude, I saw you do that on Conan a week ago. Yeah. No, that was different. They actually taped that retroactively. So
I was sitting down during that one.
He actually said that he did it for the first time the night before in Chicago. They did a college the night before, and he said that it bombed.
Oh shit! Oh, well, wow. You know these college PC audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, it's so true.
Jerry Seinfeld won't even go to a college.
Right,
can't get in.
Right. Yeah. What a weird story. That, I mean, it got covered. Of course it did. People talked about it, but it's just as crazy to think that he said that today as it was then. Even with everything that's happened since then, mm-hmm, it's still as stupid of a thing that anyone has ever said.
It's insane. And we should say, just so you guys know, that that story is completely relevant. It is my birthday in 2018. And so that's why we're talking about that story.
Yeah, those midterm elections. Holy cow. We almost flipped the Senate. Am I right?
Man, to think Donald Trump is even president yet.
The Elliott Smith thing, one thing I think you said that's interesting is about, you know, how he'll be looked at, because I think the current generation of singer-songwriters are all like obsessives with Elliott Smith. Like Phoebe Bridgers is my current favorite musician. She brings him up in literally every interview. You know, you have Conor Oberst, like Bright Eyes is obviously clearly descended from him. And it does seem like it really looms large the indie scene. So I do feel like that is true, that it maybe it's just going to get bigger than it ever actually was at the time.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really make the Nick Drake, you know, you can't really say it's like Nick Drake, because Elliott Smith was fairly popular while he was alive, whereas Nick Drake made three albums and there's evidence that there was hardly ever anyone at his shows. And it was mostly just like label heads that loved his music, and like Elton John knew about him. But other than that, there's not a whole lot of evidence that he was a very known artist. But of course, he probably will eventually end up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But it's just so strange because, I mean, all of us at that time loved Elliott Smith, but there just weren't very many of us there. I mean, and I mean, it reminds me of the first time that I saw Wilco. It's like they were known and people, they had two albums and people liked them, but there was like 150 people at the show. The first that I saw them, it just took time for them to become known, you know?
What do you think of the old conspiracy theory with Elliott Smith that his girlfriend killed?
I mean, it's honestly like the thing that makes you think the most that she killed him is that if he stabbed himself, he stabbed himself with the knife upside down, which is just such a weird, like it just, again, like he was, I mean, I never met him more than just at like the merch table, just saying hello or whatever, but he was an extremely odd person and he was on drugs quite a bit, like bad drugs. Mm-hmm. So anything is possible really, but it does seem like the craziest way to kill yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, other than like the old wives tale that like Ian Curtis stood on a block of ice and waited for it to melt, or Michael Hutchins, you know, was like trying to jack off they say that he hung himself doing that or whatever. This is just as weird as either one of those, that you would stab yourself in the heart to kill yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's the biggest reason, is that like, have you ever heard of someone doing that? Like in the wild, like I'm sure that there's like old ass stories about people doing it, but it's certainly not a common way to do it.
I do think it's interesting that you went out of your way to say that you've never met him, trying to establish an alibi of some sort.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like I didn't want to, because I mean, it wouldn't have been that weird that I would have booked a show for him. Like he was playing music at the time that I was booking shows. And so in fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think at one time I had a show booked for Heat Miser, which was his band, but they, first of all, they didn't come. And second of all, they went through so many different like members that I don't even know if he would have even been there anyway. But, you know, when there's 80 people at a show maximum, that person's doing the merch table in 1998, you know, or whatever. Like, you don't have a roadie if you're you know, having 80 people at a show. Now, I would assume these days you probably do. But back then, everyone just did their own shit. And so he was running his merch table at least the first few times that I saw. So you just talk to him just because he's there, you know. And, but yeah, so.
And Jared, you also claim you never met Kurt Cobain, right?
I never did. Although Jawbreaker did open a tour for them. I didn't go, but I would have loved to have been there, because I'm sure that Nirvana was a great live band. I mean, I wasn't really into them while they were a band.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am still not like a huge fan. Like they'll be noticeably absent from this list, which they would probably be on the majority of people's best of the 90s lists. And I do like them. I'm not in love with them.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think that spoils some of the list, but
also if you're waiting for anything other than white rock, you can just leave the show now.
Yeah. I'm excited to go through this, cause I want to hear Tommy's, answers to some of his favorite songs from the 90s. And I have a couple of thoughts myself, and I was looking at another list and I was like, oh, like I had named in my head a song that I knew would not be on this list. Then I was happy to see it validated on the Rolling Stone list as top five. But let's keep listening to this playlist. Let me find the next song here. All right, let me pull this up here. I just got a call.
And you are using the last text I sent you.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, yes. Well, then you're good.
So the last text I have from you does say, wait a second. You didn't, it's okay. All right, yeah, it's still all the same. The next song is from Belle and Sebastian, correct?
Yep. Uh-huh.
So the next song is, it's called Like Dylan in the Movies. Let's go ahead and hear it. I'm going to skip forward a little bit.
You're easy listening, settle down on the pillow soft. When they've all gone home, you can concentrate on the ones you love. You can concentrate, hey, now they've gone. But if they follow you, don't look back. Like Dylan in the movie, on your own. If they follow you, it's not your mind.
You told me to cut it, right?
Well, there's a lot of just, you know, there's a long interlude yeah. there. But it's funny because as we get closer to number one, a weird thing about this is that if I made a top six bands or artists of the decade, maybe only one artist would be on there that's on my top six favorite songs. Like, I'm not a huge Belle and Sebastian person. I felt like Boy with the Arab Strap is a great album, and then the album that song is on are both really good albums. And other than that, I was never really a fan of their stuff. I've never seen them live. It was just a time and place thing where that album just sort of hit me. I think it's called If You're Feeling Sinister is the album. Mm-hmm. And it's like start to finish a great album. It would be in my top probably 10 albums of the decade, but I'm not a huge fan of theirs otherwise. So, and that'll happen a couple more times on this list. So,
okay. Interesting. Were you a Belle and Sebastian guy, Tommy?
I definitely had a phase where I got into a lot of Belle and Sebastian songs. I never was like a diehard fan or saw them or anything, but yeah, they were popping up on my playlist a lot for a while. So I'm happy to hear them.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been like so my list did sort of change, like, you know, like one of the reasons that this was confusing for Tom is because I sent this list a while ago and then I changed it yesterday because I just recently went through the list and listened to a couple more songs that were sort of on the cusp of being on it. And I decided that I was wrong about a couple things. One of the things that would have been easy was to keep, REM on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And, certainly they're, you know, other than Radiohead, probably my favorite band of the decade. But I felt like that specifically a single song from Belle and Sebastian was better than any one single song from REM in the decade.
That's fair. I'm surprised though to see, yeah, the movement here. And so I'll just say it because it's the next song, but I was pretty surprised by the Radiohead pick. I knew that I had a feeling Radiohead would be on the list, but I was very surprised by which song you went with and how, and that they were not in the in the top three. And in the original, you had them not on the list at all, except for the honorable mention.
Well, so this is, all right, so here, let me explain. So basically, I've always listed, you know, like when I've made a playlist that had a song from OK Computer on it,
mm-hmm.
I've always used
Fit or Happier.
No, yeah.
Fitter, happier, more productive.
No, I've always used Let Down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so one of the reasons that I made the switch is because I realized that there's too many like slow, sad songs, like sad-ish songs on this list.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessary, even though in my mind maybe one of the things I'm the biggest sucker for in the world is when a band that can create a sonic mess of a song makes like a beautiful, almost like a love song.
Mm-hmm.
And so Led Zeppelin going to California is a great example.
Yes.
Where it's like you have this band
that
can
song
make
so much.
Yeah, like it's just and it's so much more memorable because of how sonically massive their songs are, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the shower and Ooh. I wanted to yeah.
What were you wearing?
Yeah. And I turned on Airbag. And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, this is Radiohead at their absolute peak at ever. And mm-hmm. there was no reason for me to mess with this and try to make it cute or whatever. This is Radiohead at the moment that they became the best band in the world in a 20-year radius. And that's exactly why I switched it, because it is just, it's like, one of the most like sonically pleasing songs. It's like somehow they made an art rock song that also could be played in a stadium. And that doesn't happen very often outside of the Who or the Rolling Stones or Zeppelin. It's, you know, you're either one or the other normally. And so that's why I switched it, because I was like, I've got too much Sad Bastard music on here and not enough like massive.
You ever drink Arrogant Sad Bastard Ale?
Yeah.
I think we should hear it. I think that you've built it up perfectly to where we're all very excited to hear it. And you did pick Airbag. Let's hear Airbag from Radiohead. Not hearing more of it, because I love it.
I know. It's so crazy. Because if there's ever been a band in the history of the world that would put nonsense at the beginning of their album, they're the number one band that you would normally think would put like feedback for like 15 minutes at the beginning of a great
yep.
album
yep.
just because they can, because the label let them and they can get away with whatever. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of what they ended up doing
yeah.
in a weird way. But to me, it's just, it's the best song that they ever made, in my opinion. And it's also there's just something about the bass lines that is just something that I had really never heard in music. Like, even in 1997, it was hard to like do something new. Like, mm-hmm. it just didn't happen anymore. Like, everything has already been done by that point. So you're just sort of changing, you know, like a band like Interpol would, they just basically were like, let's just sound like Joy Division or whatever. And like, I love them, but they're not anything that's like groundbreaking. It's just a band that I really like that really is just, and that's true of the Strokes or any other bands that I became huge fans of. War on Drugs is the same way. It's just the 80s but with a different singer, right? Mm-hmm. So it's so to have Radiohead make that album and that song as this, to me, it's going to go down, I hope I'm wrong, but as the last like top 20 album in the history of rock and roll. I do believe it'll be the last one ever. And I hope that's not true, because I want bands to keep going that just play, you know, three piece rock and roll, but it just doesn't seem like that. That's, you know, it reminds me of, I actually, earlier today I did an interview for the radio station here, and he asked me about like, why do you guys stand out as the Comedy Attic? Like, you know, you constantly are noted as this great club. And I was like, it actually is the opposite, that we're the Foo Fighters and every other band sucks. That's really what it is. It's not even, and I mean that, like, we make as many mistakes as a comedy club as the Foo Fighters do as a rock and roll band. Like, we're not the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or the Stones. We really are just good at what we do. But because by comparison, every other club has like hypnotists, it's not really, we're not doing anything. Mm. Like, we're just paying attention, and that's really it. So that's why I don't believe that we're going to ever get an album again that is as effective as this album was.
Do you think Crackers is Nirvana?
No, I don't. No,
I mean, Nirvana was Crackers.
That's yeah, right. That is true.
A bunch of white ass dudes.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's really an interesting question. You know, like, why are there no, like, I mean, I love a bunch of current bands. I mean, it's not like I don't like current music, but it just isn't. I think it's because there's way more types of music than just regular rock and roll. And that's sort of where the most talented people have sort of, migrated over away from three piece rock and roll. That's the only thing I can say, is that the most talented people in music are not playing rock and roll anymore.
I just want to comment on really fat, cause I think Radiohead is, I mean, I go back and forth on them. They're one of those bands that there's like a top five favorite bands for me, and they swim around to the top, and then somebody else, like, it's always just teetering. And yeah. I got to tell you, and I think this happens with any band you just listen to death, where I've listened to OK Computer a million times. And then what I often don't do, and I have been lately, is go back to the Bends, and I've fallen in love with the Bends again. And so now, good. For me, I think my favorite song might be Black Star. I love the, like, even though it's not as complex as the stuff on OK Computer, it just goes. It's just good, and it's right.
That's it's a great so point. I mean, honestly, it's like they're obviously a much better historical band than Wilco, but the same sort of thing happened to Wilco, where it's like you can listen to the first couple albums, and it was like they didn't realize yet that like they could put like they could just record a refrigerator running for 10 minutes.
Well, when you said that static album thing, that's exactly, yeah, that's what, like, they do. Yeah.
They didn't know yet that you could do that. So like the Bends is just like, here's whatever it is, 12
songs.
Here's
just a great album. Yeah.
Three and a half, yeah. So that's the thing, is that like, it's a very fine line between doing like having access to all of the information and just being a band that just plays 3.5 minute songs. Mm-hmm. So no question that the Bends, in fact, worst thing that could have ever happened to that.
Give me
album,
one second real fast. Sorry. Actually, continue your thought. I'll just be right back.
Yeah. I was just going to say the worst thing that could have ever happened to the Bends was okay, because it mm-hmm. would have been thought of as it like, if they would have ended up being as famous as they are now, or were, I guess, because they're probably less popular than they once were, if that would have never happened but they still became as famous, we probably would look at the Bends as the highlight of their career for the reasons that Tom just mentioned.
Yeah, when you were talking about a band that can go so maximalist doing something small. I was, you know, thinking about fake plastic trees and like stuff like that off the Benz, which is so good. And that actually, for a while I would say, not even in a contrarian way, that the Benz was my favorite Radiohead album, just because I like rock music more than I like Kid A type stuff. But OK Computer is probably the best.
Well, they definitely both would be in the 10 best albums of the decade.
Yeah.
Like there's a bunch of stuff that's not even on this list, like Neutral Milk.
That
album would be in the top three probably, but not one single song is as good as any of the six songs that are on here. But the Benz would be for sure in the top 10. It's that good. I mean,
damn, I hadn't even thought about that. I totally forgot that Neutral Milk was in the 90s because
I think it's like 96.
No, you're maybe? Totally right. That's I mean, In the Aeroplane Over the Sea might be in my top five. It's just a perfect song and almost brings me to tears every time I hear it. So it's like, it's just so good. But, and
you know, I got to see him do the album at the Buzzer.
I did too.
I think we
went to different shows though.
Oh, that's weird.
Somebody yelled the N word, and he got really upset. It was crazy. At a fucking Jeff Mangum
that
show.
Is very
it was
bizarre.
Insane.
It is so crazy that you mentioned this because how many,
I was that guy.
Yeah, right.
Oh, we were at the same show.
It is so weird to me how many times that a comedy show that has existed, or I should just say any sort of entertainment that has existed outside of the Comedy Attic. And it's not that we haven't had hecklers. Of course we have. But my point is that like how many times have we heard of this at a rock show or a non-Comedy Attic comedy show in Bloomington that this has happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just so weird that we sort of are viewed as having the most well-respected or the most respectful audiences, maybe in the country, in a comedy venue. Yet in our same town, someone who would have to know who Neutral Milk Hotel is would yell the N-word.
It's insane. Yeah, and it's like it wasn't even the whole band. It's just him up there.
I know.
Playing it, and it was amazing. I loved it. It's one of the best shows I've ever seen. But that happened, and then the other thing that was notable is me and Josh Murphy went, and we had a great time, except that guy really soured it, because you're like, well, this is our hometown, and we look like idiots now. But another guy yelled out, "Hang out with us after the show," and Mangum just didn't say anything. And then another guy yelled out, "Great choice, dude."
That's brutal.
It really made me laugh.
Like I went to go see Colin Hay, the singer of the singer of Men at Work.
Uh-huh.
And brilliant
at the Buzzkirk by himself again, and just people yell out. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like what type of person thinks that oh my God. I mean, you think that, like, you think Jimmy Buffett coming on in my car is embarrassing. If, like, being even within two rows of someone that yells out anything is the most mortifying thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely. For that split second that someone might think that you were with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so hard to be like, not me. It wasn't me. Especially when it was you. All right, let's listen to the next song on this list that we're cruising through these last few here. The next one is Mazzy Star, and it
love
is
this song.
Fade Into You. Give me 1 second to pull it.
And you know that famous here. Trump quote, when you're a Mazzy Star, they let you do it. That's what he said.
Oh my God.
Shadow. some kind of light into your darkness. Close your eyes with a smile that's fading out to you. Strange.
The only unfortunate side effect of this song is that you do fall in love with whoever you're looking at while you hear it.
Yeah, you guys want to get out of here?
I am in love with you guys right now.
So, oh my God, it's so true. And it's so crazy because, so first of all, it's the most beautiful song of the decade. I don't even think there's any question.
Mm.
And I saw them live. And never have you, it was like the night that Hillary lost, like everyone, so many white people just totally in tears seeing the song.
Just happy tears that you finally won and that things were good.
Oh, I can't believe Trump won. It's finally, we've won it.
Finally, we did it.
Yeah, it's honestly like, and that entire album is good. It's not that it's not good. It's just, I mean, like, yeah, man, it's maybe the best ending of a mixtape song that has ever existed. Like, I've always tried to end on something like that if you can, like, and certainly Night Swimming, which was originally on the list.
Yeah,
see, this is what happened with that. So one of the reasons that that things sort of shook around a little bit is because I listened to Night Swimming and then I listened to Fade Into You or Fade Into Me, Into You, whatever it's called. And it's just no comparison. As much as I like Night Swimming, it's almost like they're very similar, but one is Michael Jordan and the other one is like Dominique Wilkins. It's great, but it's not Michael Jordan. And so I just felt like I need to put a little bit more excitement on the list. So that's how Radiohead popped in instead of being on the honorable mention.
Whenever they use that song in a soundtrack, it's so effective to the point where it's almost like, how could you not use that song? Like anytime you see a movie from any year since, I think it was American Honey I was watching recently and they used it and I was like, yeah, it's a home run every single time.
Yeah. Like, almost any like two people seeing each other across a room moment after like a tumultuous thing or a guy showing up at the airport or like they should retroactively put that song in to the moment and Say Anything when he's holding the boombox.
Yeah.
You should go backwards.
Like when they replace cigarettes in movies. Yeah.
In Casablanca instead of play it again, Sam.
Oh man.
This is a good idea. All right. Let's hear the next song, which is Last Splash from the Breeders. Shit, I thought I pressed it. I thought I pressed it, but apparently I did not. Where the hell is it here?
I know a few Breeder songs, but this was not one I'd heard before.
Why is this what?
It's true.
This is their only song.
That's not true at all.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, this is like, honestly, like, people would be wrong, but they would end up on a one-hit wonder list.
Well, Cannonball is their most popular.
Is that the song you...
At least on Spotify.
I'm so confused because it's not even on Spotify. The song.
It's the same song.
Oh,
Cannonball?
Okay,
that makes more sense.
The album is called Last Splash.
Okay, right.
Last Splash in the song. I probably just typed it in wrong.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Driving on 9. You listen to that song? That song.
Right.
That's on the
song. So you have heard this, so you do know this song.
I do, oh yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it's like... There's not a person alive that's heard of the Breeders that doesn't know this song.
No, so. This is definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
The so iconic one.
This
sure.
will, yeah. of course, count against Jared in the scoring at the end that he.
Right, exactly. Because up. I wrote down this the title wrong. I am bad at stuff like that. Though.
Very cool song.
Who's cooler than Kim Deal? That's a real question.
I don't know, but yeah. I know no one that's on this podcast.
What? It's my birthday.
I remember, so even though I was into mostly punk rock by the time that this was released, we watched 120 minutes. Like, we would watch 120 minutes and Headbangers Ball both, even though most of the time they weren't going to play the stuff that we liked. But it was at least, it was like one of those things where it's like, sort of like when sports got shut down. So I would wake up early to watch like the Korean baseball league. At least it was some
Bundesliga soccer. Yeah.
At least it wasn't like popular music. Like they were playing videos and every once in a while, like a band that you know would be on there. Like they would be interviewed to like Green Day or Sam I Am or Jawbreaker would just be on. So I remember just, again, this is like, you weren't, it's really hard to explain to people who are 10 years younger than me, like you guys are, or more, however, you know, but you just, you had to act like that you didn't like stuff. You just did. It's just the way that it was that like, I wasn't allowed to say that I listened to Fleetwood Mac. I just couldn't say that because it just wasn't allowed in like punk rock or like hardcore circles that you could be like, oh, I like the Breeders, right? Like it just wasn't. So I just remember like sitting there watching it and being like, this song is good. I don't care what anyone says. This is a good song. So I remember once I sort of like decided that I didn't have to prove anything to anybody. I could just like whatever I liked. I remember buying the CD and, you know, it's not, the album is not nearly as great as the song, but it's a good album. And I really wanted there to be something on there that just was the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what this, to me, this song personifies the way that like music sounded in the 90s. And they were a band that sort of were a precursor to like a lot of stuff that ended up more famous, like, you know, Hole was certainly, I'm sure Courtney Love was really into the Breeders, I bet. So I mean, you know, like it just I felt like it stayed, and it really is, in my opinion, the second best song of the decade.
All right, fair enough. We have one more song.
It is crazy, just before you get, just to think of this being a band you had to pretend not to like.
So funny.
Well, I know, just like a different time. Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting is that like my personality is the exact opposite of that now, where like 99% of Cubs fans are insufferable pieces of shit. And we know that, but I don't care. That doesn't bother me. Like I like what I like and it doesn't faze me. Like I'm going to wear a Cubs hat, even if I know that our fans are douchebags. Like it's just, that's what I like. And so I wonder if, going through that and knowing that I was wearing like band shirts of bands that I didn't even like just to sort of show that I was like cool or whatever, like this was a reaction to that, like the way that I am now, where it's like I just like what I like and it doesn't matter. It goes, when it comes to booking comedy, I don't talk to anyone else about booking comedy. In fact, Tom and you know, I would say Tom and Melinda are the only two people that I ever am like, should I do this? Like, who should I, are they, can I book them? Like, I'll ask Tom, especially about Limestone, like, you know, but other than that, they're like the, literally the only two people that I ever ask their opinion on whether I should book a person or not.
Yeah, this is going to really fuck me, Jared, because now people are going to go, I didn't get into Limestone. Must have been must have been Tom.
Well, that's assuming that they've made it into this far into this podcast. They probably shut it off, so don't worry about it.
And you guys are doing those Limestone shows Thanksgiving night, right?
That's they right. Yep.
Festival
in person.
At the airport.
Inside. Yeah, right, right. That way, on your way to see your family, you can
mingle with 300 show. People. Yep.
You deserve it, baby. All right, let's hear the last song. And I couldn't be happier with your pick for number one. I was surprised to see it just because I feel like we've never talked about this, but
I don't even like this band really at all.
Yeah, I have a similar thing where it's like I'm not really that into them, but I love this song and like three other songs so much. But
We did talk about this on the podcast just at some point. We talked about that my favorite Smashing Pumpkins album is Adore, which I'm probably the
that's
only
shocking
one on earth.
Oh yeah, that. We did talk. Yeah, yeah,
I love that album. Like, to me, that's the only album of theirs that like start to finish is good, whereas there's certainly moments on at least two other albums.
Siamese Dream start to finish is good.
Yeah, I just don't like his voice as much there. I don't like, he's like, way too awesome. That's what I don't like about it. So, anyway.
I think we should go ahead and play the song. Everybody, I would be shocked if anybody didn't know it. It's one of my favorite songs of all time, too. And it is 1979 from the Smashing Pumpkins. So good. So good. Yeah. I talked about it before, but I bought a guitar because of at the end of the movie Clerks 2, they play this song. And also in Stranger Than Fiction, he buys a guitar and learns to play it to impress Maggie Gyllenhaal. And I only learned two songs, and one of them was this, and the other one was Red Hot Chili Peppers song. And so good. And they're both equally good.
Stop recording.
And they're equally good.
It was Suck My Kiss by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
The two most beautiful songs of all time.
My God.
Jared,
hey, baby, I learned something.
And Jared agrees, and that's the end of the show. Bye.
Oh, my God. So it's so funny. So first of all, I just found out that there's a Clerks 2. When did that happen?
You are not a big enough fan of movies.
I just sit in that green room for hours with him.
With Kevin Smith?
Yes. So God, I hope this doesn't get back to him, because he is nice. I'm not saying he's not nice. But the thing is that there's like these shut-ins that only leave their house for like a Star Wars movie or when he's at the Comedy Attic, and they all would do anything to hang out with him. Mm. And he like, because I know about hockey, he's like, please stay back here and talk to me. And I'm thinking, like, all these, like, what's the guy's name from, like, Muncie or whatever, that comic, Kyle, what was his name?
Oh,
or, like,
DeWeese.
Like, that's, he would give, like, $1,000 to be sitting in that green room with them. And I'm sitting there like, oh, my God, please, I can't do this anymore. But anyway, my point is, like, I still didn't know there was a Clerks 2.
Yeah, Clerks 2, not nearly as popular as Clerks 1 in the, you know, critic community. But I, as a, you know, 19-year-old, thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. And I was, like, a huge fan of Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, that sort of stuff. It was perfect for me. Oh, shit.
Well, one really crazy thing about it's so weird how a band that I routinely thought got it wrong over and over again, like the Smashing Pumpkins, I felt like I never thought they were bad, but they certainly had an opportunity to become something more than they were. But I don't know if any art piece in history has ever gotten it more right than the video for 1960.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's the best. It might be my favorite video. It's so good.
The most, it absolutely never has anyone nailed something more than that's exactly what that song sounds like. It's like just driving around, and that's exactly it. They got it perfect. And honestly, I actually should have probably asked you this in case, Tommy, because I feel like that you know the most of all of us about this band. Did I read somewhere, and this is going to be so boring if you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, but that song was like either an afterthought or like wasn't going to be on the album or something. I feel like I read that one time and I was like, what?
Oh, I don't know that, but that is crazy.
I could be wrong. I mean, I could be just thinking of something else, but like that would be perfect in his world. Mm-hmm. That he's sitting on this, and they were like, well, I don't know how good that song is. Like, well,
yeah, okay. It is one of my favorite songs of all time also. So I'm very happy that you, yeah. And it's hard. It is. You always feel kind of embarrassed when a band you like, your favorite of their songs is their most popular song, you know, but it's like, it really can't.
Do you think that is more popular than Tonight?
I think so. I would say, but those two today.
Not that this is the, you know, end all be all of what makes a song popular, but I'm pretty sure when I looked up Smashing Pumpkins, 1979 is way ahead of Tonight, and then Bullet with Butterfly Wings is a second.
Oh yeah,
but 1979 has almost double either of those in plays. Jared is grimacing.
Well, because Bullet with Butterfly Wings is one of those songs where you're like, nah, 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 nah,
nah. I don't know.
I also am not super into that.
Like, honestly, like, they would have been, because of how beautiful that their music is most of the time, if they would have had, like, let's say Mazzy Star sang for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's a person, but if the lead singer of Mazzy Star, or Mazzy Star, if that is her name, like, just imagine how much better they would be if they didn't have him just around,
Well, it's definitely the reason they have gone so much down in the public esteem, is because he's gone so crazy and he's such a megalomaniac. And
it's such a perfect thing that he's a Cubs fan. It's like a you're like, oh my God. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Like, it just, he's just done so much horrible crap.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, it's not like, I don't know. Did you just have a brownout?
No, I was switching my lights around because it gets so dark.
He heard the Mulaney horse bit and he fell out of his seat.
right. Well, thank you for not calling me racist for saying brownout instead of blackout.
Is that because I'm half Indian?
That's right. You know what? I fed you that one. So.
Oh, is that right? About time you feed me something, starving my ass all the time.
So this is a good a time as any to say one thing. So it's really funny. You know how, like, the other week we were going back and forth about who started Tom Hussein Brady or such and such Hussein? Hold on.
Okay, yeah, let's go.
I'm not
go
trying
for
to
it.
Take credit for it. I know it wasn't me.
I don't even think it was me, to be honest.
No,
it might have been Melinda.
Here's why. This is what happened. So for all this time, and I felt like this is a good a time to bring this up as any, she tweeted just without tagging you or anything, Tom Hussein Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And you never saw it.
Oh, really?
Or at least you never liked it. So we have always had this sort of this thing between us that it's there, but you didn't know.
That's really funny. I feel like I did know that, but maybe not. That's one of those things that I feel like me and her have said. I think it's up for debate. It could have been any of us, but I do know that one Jared Thompson.
For the audience?
That'd be Melinda Cashner.
Okay, yeah.
But I do want to point out Jared likes to take a lot of credit for things that the kid says, and I'm the kid, of course. And
true.
In that green room, I've said anything funny that's ever said, I have the rights to.
Here's the thing is that I know I didn't start it because I know at the very minimum Melinda did it before. The
but I'm glad that Emil's saying it on stage now. I think it's good that he steals all the things that, you know.
Well, the thing is, here's the thing is that I know I didn't start it. And the only reason that I'm even joking around that I did is because I did say Bill Hussein Gates, and it had been several years since anyone else had really used it. So I think I tweeted Bill Hussein Gates and it was something stupid. Like, these people are going to be really upset. This is when people were like, he's going to microchip us or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I think my tweet or whatever it was something like, they're going to be really upset when they find out that his middle name is Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, I just thought this would be a great time to tell you that it all started with Melinda just writing Tom Hussein Brady.
I do believe that. I feel like that is something that it's possible that me and Melinda were having a beer too, and that we jokingly said together, and that she tweeted it. It's also possible she just straight up tweeted it. It's also a thing that I did forget about until I saw that, that interaction on Facebook. By the way, we didn't do a Facebook for this week because we're double dipping. We're doing a 2 in 1 day, so we get to skip that part. What I do want to do real fast. Well, you do have 2 honorable mentions. We're not going to play them, but I do think we should say them real fast.
Okay.
And go ahead. I mean, you gave them to me on the list, but why not?
Well, so Sunny Day Real Estate. So they're an interesting thing. So for those that maybe are sort of like not necessarily full blown into indie rock. Sunny Day Real Estate are a band that has an interesting story that they could probably make, you know, a documentary about it, because when they were together the first time, there was all this controversy about that they broke up because Jeremy Enoch was Christian or whatever it is. And so anyway, what I was going to say is that this album, so when How It Feels to Be Something On was released, like, there was all of this sort of like build up in the indie rock world of like, they're back, they're going to make an album, and that's the opening song on the album. And my friend EJ, who is a DJ. Yeah, that's right. EJ, the DJ.
You can't write this stuff, people.
I know. On the Outer Banks, gave me an advanced copy of the album and called me and was like, I'm going to play the song on the radio. I'm going to play the first single on the radio, and then I'm going to bring you the album right after this. I'm going to let you have it. And he played that song on like regular radio. And they ended up getting like a bunch of calls for people to play it. And so anyway, it just for me, How It Feels is their best album, period. Even though I think most people would say that the first album, Diary, is probably their best album. I'm just not one of those people, but that's what that's from. And then the other honorable mention is another thing where it's like, well, it could very easily be on here. And Portishead All Mine is, first of all, that album is spectacular. And it's one of those things where it's like kind of hard to pick one song from that album, but that would be sort of the next, they would be 7 and 8 on my list. Now, keep in mind also, I didn't want to double dip artists. Mm-hmm. So like, I didn't want to have 2 Radiohead songs or 2 Elliott Smith songs, but if that were true, I probably would have, as we talked about earlier, Let Down by Radiohead would probably be ahead of a couple of these songs. But still, I love the list. And this is sort of encompasses my life in the 90s and sort of still. I mean, this is, I probably listen to every one of these artists, you know, fairly often.
I was surprised because you've said before personally to me that your favorite song of the 90s is Achy Breaky Heart by Billy Ray Cyrus. And I thought that that was going to be on the list.
Yeah, it's weird that you left it off. Is this like a thing where you're still, even though you said that thing earlier about how you have to pretend you don't like stuff, you still actually are living in under that umbrella?
It actually was still, it was still my favorite song of the 90s for a long time. And then we went to the Grand Ole Opry. Mm-hmm. And he played that song. Like he played, here's what I'm saying. Like you guys have to understand, when you go to like a Tuesday night concert at the mm-hmm. Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, it's an open mic.
Sure.
It's basically what it is.
Yeah, you don't want to, it's embarrassing to play the hits at some point.
Yeah, like Vince Gill forgot a song. Like he was in the middle of a song. He's like, I forgot the words because it's brand new.
Sure.
So like all of a sudden, he plays Achy Breaky Heart. Of course, everyone loves it. And I'm like, this is crazy. So that's why it's not my number one song anymore. I lost a lot of respect for him that night.
What percent of that story was true just now?
Well, not, it was never my favorite song.
None of my part.
That song. He really did.
That and is like, insane. I thought you were fully making everything you just said.
What's his name from Hootie and the Blowfish was there.
Darius Rucker.
He just played a bunch of stuff no one knew. Like everyone else was playing a bunch of like unknown songs.
Tommy mentioned this earlier that I'm really good at basketball, but I'm actually I actually am the king of Darius Rucker Park.
Darius Rucker Park. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where they let me play.
Oh my God. I only want to play with you.
Let's play some 2-on-2.
So I do have a question, and I know you just wrote in the chat that you guys are going to do this for Patreon. Yeah. But do you already know what your lists are? Like, do you know? Like, I guess here's my question: is that you don't have to say what it is, mm-hmm. but do your brains work like mine do, where like everything is put into a list? Like, do you already know what your favorite song of the 90s is?
So even saying it. Even just scrambling to come up with a top six, I wrote down like 15 songs. Right, so yeah. I have a lot of homework to do.
That's what I was just doing because I was just remembering band. Like sometimes you're just like, oh, I totally forgot that band. Yeah. That my favorite music of theirs is in the 90s and not the 2000s. So it's going to be interesting. But you just teased it, but we should tell people. So Tommy and I are going to do our list on the Patreon, baby. Yeah. That's right, behind the paywall.
$3 a month. We're almost at 100.
We're so close. I hopefully by the time this comes out, people will be at 100. But you know what?
I'm going to join. Where do I go? Seriously.
All right.
Patreon.com/standbyyourband. Good question, Jared. Way to get it set up. And it's been we've been doing some fun stuff. We do episodes every week, and it's a lot of fun stuff. It's a lot of mostly people talking about stuff they actually like, or us talking about what we've been listening to, but we're going to do some more fun stuff with it. And we'll do one where we talk about our top 90s hits. And I already was cooking up quite a few. And I don't know if I have a feeling Radiohead will probably make an appearance, but I'm not even certain, because we got to remember Britney Spears was in the 90s, baby.
Well, you know what? And totally seriously, when I made my regular music best of the 90s, there's some great stuff on there, like Love Fool by the Cardigans.
Exactly. That's exactly the sort of shit that I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Where there's all these songs that are just like, they're so good. And even if you don't go any deeper into a band than a couple hits from the 90s, you're like, this is undeniably great. So we'll see. It's up in the air. I'm going to definitely deliberate over it.
Yeah.
Sure. But I think what are we gonna rate this playlist? It's the best of the 90s, so
yeah, there's not a bad song on the list.
I'm gonna give it a 5.5 because you brought up the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You're taking that away from your
show. Fair enough.
I'm annoyed because I wanted to give you less than a high score again, but I can't. They're great choices, and I already liked most of these songs, and very emblematic of the period, even though it is sad bastard stuff, but that kind of is what you think of when you think of the 90s. Yeah, people in flannel shirts being sad, being mm-hmm. cool.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. And hard to leave some stuff off here, but also hard to debate or hard to, say that any of these songs shouldn't be on there. So great work here, Jared. We appreciate you doing this. You did not invent the podcast, and Is there anything you want to like? I mean, the Comedy Addict website, go there, buy gift cards, yeah, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we, by the time this comes out, you know, it probably will be after the holidays. So hopefully we're still doing live in person and Zoom shows at that point. Certainly, you know, by the time there's a vaccine, we hopefully will be back to just having regular numbers of people. So by the time, hopefully when you both come back to the club, there'll be a full room.
That would be incredible. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know when this will be, but yeah, check out Tommy's Christmas album. If it's still, if you're still in the spirits for it.
Yeah. Just go to TommyMcNamara.bandcamp.com. It'll be up there. It's $5, 6 songs. I think you'll enjoy it. If you're on the Patreon, you already heard all of it. But
yeah, hey, there you go. That's another thing. It's on the Patreon, baby, and still buy it because we played it through a speaker into a microphone, so you'll get better quality.
Yeah, plus, and you'll own it too.
Yeah, and you'll be able to play it for your friends without us talking in between every song. So do that. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And yeah, get on the Patreon. We'll see you next week. Keep it crispy. Bye.
Bye, guys.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.